Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for Sporting KC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Of course, if you're listening live or if you're listening on the podcast at 810WHB.com, on the 810 app or on Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts, we appreciate you subscribing, downloading, and listening. My name is Nate Bucati, joined as always by the one and only El Jefe, Carter Augustine. Carter, how are you, man?
Great, great, Nate. International break, so Sporting KC with a little bit of a deserved weekend off, right?
Yeah, for some of the guys, it was a deserved weekend off. For a couple of other guys, it was milestone performances in international play, which we will talk about coming up on the show. We'll lay out the menu for you today because we got a big week. So they did have the week off, Sporting Kansas City, but next week is a big one for Sporting KC as they will play on Saturday against the Montreal Impact at 2 o'clock. Then on Thursday in Monterey, what an epic match that should figure to be. And then they turn around and they go to a brand new team that's got all sorts of buzz, Cincinnati, for a nationally televised game a week from Sunday. So another one of those big stretches coming up. We're going to talk about all of that with you. We are going to be joined by Christian Namath, who's in the Golden Boot race, by the way, for the CONCACAF Champions League right now and just getting back from his international duty with Hungary. And we're also going to talk with one of the executives for Sporting Kansas City, Director of Player Personnel, Brian Bliss, who, well, he's got even more than that as a job title nowadays, his full title, Director of Technical Director and Vice President of Player Personnel. Brian Bliss will join us to talk about a lot of different things that he has his hands involved in with Sporting Kansas City. That's all coming up on the show here in a little bit. But Carter, like you said, international window. Of course, we got to watch United States play. They're playing as we air this thing live right now in their second game. Sadly, I think the biggest news to come out of it was a big injury to Weston McKennie for the U.S. But for Sporting Kansas City-related players, the two Hungarians, Christian Namath and Votan Barat, go to Hungary. Barat plays all 90 minutes in a big win for them in their Euro qualifiers against Croatia. Johnny Russell plays in both games for Scotland, starts the one in San Marino, and scores his first ever goal for the Scots.
Yeah, congrats to Johnny Russell. I'm sure that's got to feel really good for him, really special moment for him. He always talks about how excited he is to play for the Scottish national team and what an honor it is for him. So who would have guessed it would have been with his right foot, huh?
Yeah, no kidding. That I don't know how many times we saw that from Johnny with a Sporting Kansas City in the past year. Hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to Johnny about that sometime here in the near future. But for Votan Barat to get to play all 90 minutes in that game against Croatia as well, they get a 2-1 victory. And we also should not forget about Gwatu Biaye, who played for – it was kind of a – I mean, it was an African Cup of Nations game. They're not going to qualify his team, Rwanda, but he did play in their game, and he'll be coming back as well.
Yeah, but I think that was against the Ivory Coast, right?
So yes.
That's a decent little challenge for Abdul Gwatu Biaye. And I actually saw him in the airport on the way out from Denver, and he was telling me his flight path, which was Denver to New York to Amsterdam to Rwanda. So that sounded like a full day of travel to me. We'll see how he does on his way back here. But another international player for Sporting KC, and he's still pretty young, so to get into a big AFCON qualifier against Ivory Coast. Excited to see him eventually with SKC, that's for sure.
Yeah, a lot of miles on those guys. I mean, Johnny Russell went to Kazakhstan first. That was a tough result for the Scottish national team. And then San Marino, and then back home, and who knows how many flights he had to change between here and there. And then, of course, Namath and Barat going to Hungary, playing a home game against Croatia, and then coming back to the United States. They did not get into the 18 in their first game for Hungary. I believe it was against Slovakia in that round. But all those guys are going to be back, maybe having the day off today here as we do the show on a Tuesday. But back at full go, getting ready for Montreal starting tomorrow. And I should also point out over the weekend, it was a weekend off for everybody, but not for you, Carter, because you were calling the Swope Park Rangers game. I had the joy of watching that at home while you guys brought us that telecast, that 2-2 result. But we talked about it last week beforehand. You want to tune into these Swope Park Rangers games because we got to see Gideon Zalalem play out there. We got to see Gianluca Busio, some young academy kids, Tyler Freeman out there in the mix. And I'm leaving out players, but the point is, young guys we think will play maybe minutes for Sporting Kansas City this season, let alone in years to come. So really exciting to watch Swope Park Rangers right now.
Yeah, it was, and it was a good challenge. Pittsburgh Riverhounds were the best defensive team in the entire USL last season, so I think it was a good game. And you're right, I believe it was seven SKC players in the starting lineup on loan down with the Swope Park Rangers. Got to see Rodney Wallace.
Kellen Rowe
got a run out and a goal. It's going to be really interesting to watch them all season long, because last year and this year it seems like more of a focus to get some lone players down and getting games, but also bringing some academy players up. And you mentioned Tyler Freeman. I think we'll see him a lot in a Rangers jersey this year. That's for sure. So, yeah, it was good to do the home opener with the Rangers. They've got a weekend off now themselves, but back at Children's Mercy Park the weekend where Sporting goes to Cincinnati.
Yeah, it's going to be a couple of stretched rosters, I think, in that game, considering how much Sporting has to get ready for between now and then. All right, we're going to go ahead and take a break so that we have enough time to sit down with Brian Bliss and with Christian Namath and get you ready for this big week of matches coming up for Sporting Kansas City. So that's all straight ahead. This is the Sporting KC Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. The Sporting Kansas City Show continues on Sports Radio 810 WHB, your home for SKC Soccer, plus the 810 WHB app, the website, Sports Radio 810, 810WHB.com, and of course you can download the podcast on Spotify, iTunes, anywhere podcasts are available. And we've been having a lot of fun so far this year talking to different people within the organization that make Sporting Kansas City go. We've had a chance to talk to people in facilities like Dan Lally to tell us about the brand new field that was put in during the off season. We had a chance to talk to Mateus Manuel about the fitness component and how he got to be the man that runs that for Sporting Kansas City. And this is going to be an equally, and maybe even more so, interesting conversation today as we're sitting down with Brian Bliss, Technical Director and Vice President of Player Personnel for Sporting Kansas City. And even if that's a lengthy title, I don't think it describes everything that you do. Brian, how are you, man?
Good, man. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Well, and how about let's start with the addition to the job title so far this year. You want to talk about, maybe can you tell us about what some of your additional responsibilities are now for the team?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the overall responsibilities have changed much. I think just over time and the working relationship with Peter, they felt it was warranted to maybe give you a little bit of title and a bump of pay as well, which never hurts. But, you know, all along, it's always been a working relationship with Peter and trying to find players that fit the characteristics of what we're looking for in players. Find positional needs, manage that cap, and negotiate contracts that give us an advantage on the field.
So there's so much to get into with you, because I mean, you've got a long history with this club, going back to the days with the Wizards, your days as a player and as an assistant coach, winning supporter shields here, and all of those things, but also as a player with the U.S. men's national team. And I kind of like to start with you there a little bit. 1984 to 1995, there were some incredibly watershed moments for the United States men's national team during your time as a player. And I know I've been lucky enough to talk to you about the time that you guys, you know, qualified and made it to the World Cup right before the World Cup was coming to the United States. When you think back on those times, maybe what are you most proud of, your contributions and all that to the what you see as U.S. soccer now?
Yeah, I mean, we were all in the same boat as terms of players. Most of us with a college background, there was a few what I call holdovers from the old NASL that had just gone out of business. So you had some called played-in pros and some guys that were a little bit older. But the majority of the players were all in the same boat at college playing careers, and very few of us with a pro career until maybe, you know, we got out of college in our senior year. But I think one of my, you know, trademarks or legacy or whatever was that I was able to play for the national team under five different coaches.
Wow.
So I always say that five coaches saw some value in me, whether it was playing, you know, left back, left wing, internal midfield, whatever it was. But I was able to sustain myself over that length of period of time under five different coaches, and you know, maybe didn't add up to as many caps as it normally would. But getting a cap back in the day was very difficult because a lot of national teams didn't want to play our national team, so we played a lot of club teams.
Wow.
You know, we were playing Sampdoria, Roma, you know, Sao Paulo. Big club teams that were just as good as any national team, but you never got credit or got service credit for it because we just couldn't get the national team games.
So I tell you what, and part of your responsibility now is evaluating players at Swope Park Rangers and the academy. So this could be kind of a crossover question here, since you're evaluating young players. Five different coaches. Every coach values different things. So you must have had to try to figure out what each coach values and adjust yourself. What kind of advice would you give kids when it comes to that, when they're trying to be a player and they want to make sure they impress whatever could be a variety of different coaches out there?
Yeah, I mean, you've got your own skill set, and you kind of know by that age kind of what your skill set is and where your strengths lie and where your weaknesses lie. And, you know, it's kind of covering up your weaknesses and accentuating your strengths or your positives. And, you know, one of my strengths was always, you know, the ability to run the line and find passes and get forward. So for me, it was always playing within myself. You know, I wasn't a guy that was going to swing a ball from you know, diagonally, like you see Matt Beisler hit, you know, 65 yards across the field on a dime. You know, I wasn't going to do that. That's not my strength. My strength was the quick, you know, yeah, in and out type of stuff and combination play, a little bit like Graham Zusi. But Graham also was able to hit that long diagonal ball, and that wasn't one of my strengths. But similar to Graham Zusi was my strengths, and I played to those strengths, and it worked out for me for a long period of time. And as you said, for five different coaches, and it was given credit for that.
So you played, as you mentioned, kind of in that period between the NASL and then MLS, obviously a couple years in MLS as well. I'm curious what it was like in the in-between years there between those two leagues, and then also what your experiences were like as an American in Europe at a time when I think maybe there weren't a whole lot of Americans playing over there.
No, there wasn't too many, and that's where we were trying to bridge the gap there. The, you know, a couple of us had played that last year of the MISL, and it was only the only game in town at the time. So mm-hmm. if you wanted to get paid and play soccer, that was where it was at. So, you know, begrudgingly, we all chipped in. We all signed up for teams, and I played in Cleveland, and, you know, the league went out of business in that year after I played, and, you know, probably was a good thing because it forced us to do other things, and, you know, it led into the Olympics and led into the World Cup, and then I was able to use that leverage there to get a contract in Europe, and, you know, kind of stayed over there for 6 years. And it was an interesting time because it was just after the wall had come down in East Germany, and I was able to find a club over there and kind of made that my home.
So once again, we're visiting with Brian Bliss. I'm reading from your official bio here in terms of the job, you know, some of the job description stuff. Brian Bliss oversees Sporting KC player personnel matters while assisting in domestic and international scouting. He also shares player assessment role for Swope Park Rangers and Sporting KC Academy, reporting to manager and sporting director Peter Vermees. That's a lot of stuff there. That's a lot of stuff. And every time we talk to somebody who works in this organization, when we were talking to Mateus, you know, he goes back to 2006 when he got into it, and there was one guy to do nutrition. You know, you were the chiropractor, you were the trainer, you were everything. And now, you know, everything keeps growing in this sport. What about the scouting in MLS? What is it like today? What was it like maybe when you were coaching with the Wizards from 2000 to 2006? And where do you see it going from here?
Yeah, I mean, obviously everything's grown exponentially, and, you know, rosters are getting bigger player-wise, and obviously financials as well around those. So it's only natural that you're going to put more money into the scouting aspect of things and having knowledge of players. And we've taken on, in this offseason, and now we've taken on three full-time guys, well, really four with Esteban, who's come back to join the club as well. So we've got four other people on other than myself that dedicate their time to scouting domestically and internationally. And we've got three guys of those four that are placed overseas. And kind of my job is to manage those guys, do my own scouting as well, but to manage those guys and manage the players that they're finding for us to plug them into holes or put them in the depth chart and, you know, kind of dig around a little bit to find out information on them because they are players of what we're looking for. So, you know, it's the management of that plus doing my own talent scouting as well. And, you know, it's funny that you mentioned I'll be leaving this week, actually, for a trip to Europe to take a look at a couple of guys and meet with the agents and the players themselves because you get a feel for those players and how they interact with you, even though maybe their English may not be the best. But you can tell a little bit by body language and mannerisms a little bit if they're a guy that may fit the club.
Yeah, it seems like the guys that you have brought in over the past few years has been character has been as much a part of it as what they can do on the field. Is that an approach that you take when you go over on these scouting trips?
Yeah, I mean, that helps. I mean, you can't get everything out of a quick meeting sometimes. You have a lunch meeting, and it lasts, you know, an hour and a half to 2 hours, and you can kind of say, hey, that went well. And, you know, we jokingly said to Peter the other day, tell him about the trip and, you know, the guys and all that. I said, Pete, I don't think I've ever met with a player that I didn't like, you know, because they can fool you for an hour easily, even if they're not the right guy. I'm sure they could fool you for an hour. Mm-hmm. But I said, I'll try to get as much out of it as I can and dig around a little bit and talk to the clubs and sporting directors of the clubs that these guys play for and see if there's a fit there for something down the road.
So, you know, anytime you hear about the world of scouting, whatever the sport is, you always get this picture of a guy going to some remote place and discovering this incredible, you know, specimen that no one's ever seen before. Mm-hmm. And in the world of soccer, it's literally the world. I mean, you've got guys from Africa that you just brought in, Europe, South America. It could be anywhere. Can you give us a story, maybe the craziest or weirdest place you've ever gone to try to watch a guy play?
Yeah, and I just got invited to go back, and I told them I would not go. It would be Ghana.
No kidding.
When I was with Columbus Crew, I took a trip over there. It was a made-for tournament for scouting, and they'd brought some European teams in, and there might have been another MLS team there. I'm not quite sure, but certainly, you know, there were some European teams there. And we had to go to this remote area outside of a car, which was about a three-hour ride, and I was told when I took the trip, oh yeah, it's just, you know, right up the road from a car, the capital. Well, it wasn't. It was about 3 to 4 hours on a bus that we went with, and then, you know, as things typically happen in Africa, the tournament got kind of out of whack, and they canceled the last day. But the bus that took us up there wasn't coming back until the two more days. So I wanted to get the heck out of there. So this other guy put me on a bus at this bus depot at the local market, and it was chaos in this open market. And I got on this bus with this guy, and I thought, oh, my God, you know, I'm literally kidding. There was people carrying live animals on the bus and all stuff. It's something you would thought people, they're making this stuff up.
Yeah.
It was happening, man. It was a four-hour ride with this bus back to a car to get to the hotel to stay one more night so I could get on a flight.
And you didn't even get to see anybody play?
No, I did. I got to see two of the days.
Oh, two. Okay.
But the days three and day four got canceled, and much of us were like, we're not sitting around here for three more days with no more games.
Yeah.
But the bus that took us up there wasn't coming back for three more days, so we found our own way to get back. So it was a bit chaotic. Yeah.
So have you found recently that international players are more receptive to MLS or maybe even know more about the league than in years past?
For sure, because the quality of the player that's come in the last, you know, 3 to 4 years, not just quality but also name players. I think the broadcasting of our league is now, and I don't even know, listen to Don Garber, he'll tell you 131 countries or something. Mm-hmm. That's probably accurate. So a lot of people get to see our games now that didn't get to see them before. I think it's attractive in terms of the presentation of the games, in terms of stadiums, fields. You know, the word is spreading about training facilities and how the players are treated here. Nobody doesn't get paid, which happens in a lot of places around the world. You know, so there's a lot of positive things going on. So there are a lot more people looking at our league as a league of choice, and you're seeing it even on the coaching side.
We're visiting once again with Brian Bliss. Now, some of our listeners might, if they didn't already know all about you, they probably heard your name a little bit when all the news came out about Gideon Zalalem coming into the fold for Sporting Kansas City because of the relationship that you had with him coaching the U-20s when he was with the United States U-20s. And then, of course, when they had the big press conference, you were there with him to talk about it. So I'd like to explore that a little bit with you. A player like, you know, Zalalem, when he becomes available, can you, I don't know how much you can tell us, but How difficult of a process is it lining something up with a big club like Arsenal and working out all the particulars to make a deal happen where you can bring him here?
Yeah, that one was probably a little bit more difficult than a lot of deals we have. You know, I always say that, you know, in a deal there's, you know, the former club or the current club, mm-hmm. the wanting club, meaning Sporting. You got an agent, you got a coach, you know, you've got potentially a wife or a girlfriend.
Parents, maybe.
Parents, right. Yeah. There's all sorts of factors that get into getting a deal done, and the overall desire, does the player really want to come? So you've got a lot of factors, and the Gideon deal was a difficult one because, you know, Arsenal's Arsenal, and they don't, yeah. you know, I don't, they don't look down at us, but they probably don't respect the league so much because it's not a, call it a top five league in the world, and that's usually where their business is being done. So I think they were looking for a little bit more of the slice of pie than they were deserving, and it really killed the deal for over, I'd say, 5-6 weeks to get it done because of that. But it was a long process. I mean, Gideon was somebody that we had put on our discovery list back in June last year, and I let him sit there because I knew he was coming off of injury, and if he got himself going and got himself healthy, he could be a viable guy for not only our team, it could be anybody's team, but specifically for us, the way we play and his skill set, he'd be a good fit for us, and timing is everything, and this one worked out.
What did you see from him with the U-20s? I mean, I think a lot of people are just so curious because they've known his name, right, you know, since he got with Arsenal as a teenager, but maybe haven't had a chance to see what all the hype is about yet because he just hasn't had a chance to play in front of everybody.
Yeah, I mean, one of the hallmarks of his game is he's got a very good skill set in terms of being on the ball, being ball sure, being ball secure, kind of like a Illy Sanchez. Illy doesn't make many mistakes. He doesn't turn the ball over too often. Gideon can be a little bit more dynamic maybe than Illy in terms of surging forward with the ball because he's got 8 and 10 skill sets. But I still think his best spot would be 6, helping you build the game and secure the ball in that possession game. But I think he has some abilities to also attack a little bit more, as maybe a Roger would. Doesn't that necessarily have the gusto and fight maybe that Roger has.
Who does?
Yeah, right. That's a tough skill set to find, right?
Yeah. But
that's kind of Gideon's skill set. And you can give him balls, you know, into his feet, into traffic and stuff, and he'll find his way to wiggle out or with a dribble or find a passing solution that the average guy may not find. Now, being a little bit out of rhythm with his injury and not being able to play over the last 18 months has probably set him back a bit. But I think our environment and facilities and the way Peter manages the roster and the young guys, I think it's an opportunity for him, you know, to find his game to where he was at the under-20s World Cup before he got injured, because he was on a good track at that moment.
Not to and we got to see him for the first time this past weekend with the mm-hmm. Swope Park Rangers. Mm-hmm. Not to harp on a bunch of individual players, but I'm curious about Abdul Gwatubaye because you talked about going to Ghana and that being an interesting trip. I would imagine Rwanda kind of similar. They even have a less developed soccer program than Ghana does. How did you guys find Gwatubaye and what type of player can we expect him to be?
Yeah, those are a little bit different situations, I think.
Sure.
You know, because there's a what I would call low risk, high reward type thing in terms of the investment. So maybe we're willing to take a little bit more risk in those deals. We have a couple of guys that we source out. They're not what I would call on the book guys that scout mm-hmm. for us, but the guys that we trust that have brought us players in the past and they know what we're about, and you know, we have to place a little bit of trust in these guys. And you know, he brought us this player when we said we were looking for a central defender, you know, so big and some athleticism but decent on the ball, didn't have to be, you know, Baresi in the back, mm-hmm. But had to be competent. And you know, he sent us the name and we did the research on him, and you know, this was one player that had a lot of footage, had a lot of video on him through our Y-Scout database, because he was playing regularly with his club team in African Champions League, was playing and featuring with his full national team in African Nations qualification, and had played on the youth national teams as well. So there was an opportunity to see quite a bit of footage at, let's say, African standards because of those competitions, and we were able to source him that way and made the decision.
Before we let you go, Brian, the other aspect of your job that I did want to touch on, because I do think, to me, this is the most exciting evolution of the league from my perspective, that we're finally just now starting to see the first fruit being born, at the Major League Soccer level is, all these teams like Sporting Kansas City that have invested in the academy system and bringing up players to the youth. We're seeing teams like Sporting KC, Real Salt Lake, FC Dallas. There are kids out on the field in MLS games playing now, and we see Tyler Adams get sold for a huge amount of money. How different is that, and how much do you think that's going to change the way the world of soccer works in the United States with kids coming up instead of being drafted from college like you talked about, coming up through systems like Sporting Kansas City?
Yeah, that's going to be more the norm than it is the kid you're taking out of college in the draft. I mean, even these kids that are the better college players who are given, let's say, Generation Adidas contracts and not finishing school, I still think the norm is going to be more, the Busios, the Lindsays, and the guys you mentioned from Dallas and Salt Lake, and even the Red Bulls have done a good job of bringing kids through their academy. That's going to be more the norm, and kids cutting their teeth at a younger age with the B teams and elevating them to the first team. There is a lot of money being invested there. Our club is no different than most in terms of where we're putting our money, and we've got to make sure that we are, bringing guys through and giving them opportunities. And I think, it's only a matter of time before we also sell a guy like Tyler Adams was sold. Mm-hmm. And I think, once we get a couple more, and it's not us, the league gets a couple more of these guys like him and Alphonse Davies and Chris Richards at FC mm-hmm. Dallas and with mm-hmm. the Bayern Munich, more clubs are going to find it more attractive, and they're going to be parking themselves in our league, watching our players, and it's only going to be a benefit to everybody.
Well, Brian, this has been a lot of fun, getting to know you a little bit, getting some insight from you. We could certainly talk even more, so maybe we'll have to have you on again sometime if you're up for it.
No problem, whatever you need.
All right, that is Brian Bliss, and great information, great insight on the way some of the things work behind the scenes here with Sporting Kansas City. We'll take a break. When we come back, Christian Namath will join us as well. He's in the race for the Golden Boot for the CONCACAF Champions League already this season, and we'll talk about that with him as we come back on the Sporting Kansas City Show. This time, Felipe Gutierrez takes the corner. Barat heads it toward goal, and it's knocked in by Christian Namath! Finally, Sporting KC have broken through! Back on the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. We are pleased to be joined now by the co-frontrunner in the CONCACAF Champions League Golden Boot race. He's got 4 goals already in that competition and tied with Ener Valencia from Tigres in that race. And he's back from international duty as well. Hungarian forward and Sporting Kansas City forward, Christian Namath joins us. Christian, how are you doing, man?
Doing good, thank you. What's up, guys?
So when did you get back from Europe?
Just this morning, 1 o'clock p.m. arrived, so little rest, and now we have some recovery session and then ready for tomorrow.
Recovery session and then back to work it goes. What was the flight like, the travel from? Did you go straight from Colorado to Slovakia?
No, actually, we from Denver, we go to New York and then New York to Budapest.
Okay.
And then after a couple of days, we go to Slovakia. We have a game there.
Yeah.
And then now we have a little crazy two-step, we go first to London.
London.
And then yeah. Chicago.
Chicago.
And then, after the KC.
Okay, so you've been in and out of a lot of airports in the past few
airport
days.
Airport life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about the Hungarian national team first. You guys got a 2-1 victory over Croatia. Croatia was one of the big stars of the World Cup this last time around. Of course, they're a really good team. That must have been an incredible atmosphere in Hungary.
Yeah, we have, after the first game against Slovakia, and nobody expected, to be honest.
Yeah.
But always home field, our supporters, one of the best for sure, like in KC.
Yeah.
They are very good and give us some extra power and motivation. And then we beat the World Cup finalists.
Yeah. Runners up. You guys did it, 2-1.
Yeah.
Big result. Boti got 90 minutes in that game. What did you see from him out there on the pitch?
Boti played well. He controlled his area, so I'm happy for him.
Did you get to see any friends and family? I know you're working the whole time you're back there. Or is it just a business trip the whole time?
Yeah, no time. Time to go home. Just after the game, we have a couple of hours to see our friends, family, and that's it. Yeah.
Is that tough? I mean, like, you go all the way back there, and you're so close to your friends and family, but you don't really get to spend any time with them.
A little bit. You have the feeling just go home just for a day, but, yeah, it's most important just come back fast as possible to have this recovery session and then be ready.
Well, yeah, the miles are starting to tot up for you. I mean, we were talking about this being a weekend off for us and for some of the guys, but you've been to Panama, you've been to Mexico, to L.A., to Denver, and you just named 17 other airports as well. how's this season been for you, the start of it, with all this crazy travel and all this this moving around?
It's just a mental game, I think. So I was prepared for that, to be honest. Like, I have the experience. Like 3 years ago, I did the same thing. So I know how to sleep, how to eat, and all these things to be fresh and not to have jet lag.
Yeah.
So I need 1 or 2 days, and I can change everything, and I'm ready. I feel pretty good now, so I'm happy with that.
Well, you've got to feel pretty good about the way things are going on the field for you so far this year. We talked about 4 goals in the Champions League for you already. What do you think is the biggest reason? Why are you having so much success early this season?
The preseason. If I'm fit and I can do my things, I think I can do. I can give my best, and of course the team start to use to me and how is my moves and all these things, and so all these small things helps to score goals and to be better.
What's that been like? You mentioned the team getting used to your movements and maybe you getting used to your new teammates. What's that been like over the past 6 months and into this preseason now?
Yeah, it's huge. It's of course the other striker who played before me was different, and different moves and all these things. So of course the team needs time. Still, we have to improve that thing, to be honest. We can be much better with that. But every game I feel much better, and I think, I hope the team also like this type of style what I used to play.
Well, Peter Vermees clearly likes your style. He told everybody in this offseason, we've got our number 9. He's here right now. A lot of people thought, are they going to go out and bring in somebody? Because last time you were in Kansas City, we saw you in that position a little bit, but we saw you more on the wings. What does that do for you as a player when the guy who brought you here, your head coach, says, no, this is my guy, and I believe he's going to get the job done? That's got to give you a lot of confidence, right? How does that make you feel when you go into a situation like that?
Yeah, of course, it's give me confidence, but also give me a responsibility to be ready. When I had this operation off season, I was totally focused, like, fast as possible to be ready, and then the fitness level and all these things has to be good for the preseason. So I came back after the injury pretty well, and I can start the preseason, and the fitness level was good, and just give you the power and the motivation to show to everybody you're going to be ready.
Well, you guys started the preseason earlier this year as well because of the Champions League. On the outside, it seems like that's been a really big focus of the team this year, is the Champions League and trying to win this trophy. Has that been a focus for you guys, and what have you made of winning your first two series against Toluca and Independiente?
Yeah, that was the main focus, I can say that, for the beginning of the season, because that's the trophy what we can win the first fastest possible we can. So we try to be the first who win this trophy, first MLS team who win this trophy. Of course, we have between every Champions League game a league game, so also important. Don't take so many points different, like you have to be close to the top teams. It's not easy, but we start to rotate, and of course all these things has to be good, like both the Champions League and the league have to be successful, otherwise it's in the end we're gonna be too much behind the top teams in the league. So of course, right now the most important is the Champions League, but we have to concentrate for the league as well.
Yeah, keep getting those results. Is it difficult emotionally to get up for both things at the same time? Like you said, when you have a league game, but you know that right around the corner is this big trip to Monterrey, do you have enough emotional energy and everything to get yourself ready for both of those games at the same time?
I think we prepare for that. We have a very good region after every game, and the guys always start to be professional in this way, like all the small things what you can help for the recovery, and of course the motivation level it's have to be there, because it's not just you go to the Champions League game and you win the game and you're happy, and then it can be dangerous, you know, for the league game. So I think we start to use these two games per week, and until now we manage it pretty well.
Well, Nate's talked about your four goals in the Champions League so far. Let's talk about the last series against Independiente. What do you think was the key in getting past that series? And you started the first game on the road, as you will do here against Monterrey as well.
From my tracker standpoint, it's the most important to manage it like first zero goal, and the team has to be always in a good position and good pressing position and the right timing and all these things. So I think we have good patience to not panicking like a 0-0 first half. We missed a lot of chances and we still playing our style. That was the key probably. And after the first goal, we also show a little character from the team, like we still playing and score goals, because you never know. After 1-0, you step back and then they have a lucky goal and 1-1, and after everything is different. So I think that's how we can grow like a team, win these kind of games and manage it.
We're visiting with Christian Namath as we get ready for Saturday's game against the Montreal Impact at 2 o'clock at Children's Mercy Park. Again, you can get your tickets at SeatGeek and at SportingKC.com. I want to go back to the style of play for this team, because when you were here in 2015, Peter and the staff were starting to put together this style of play, but they didn't have all of the pieces yet to play the way that they wanted to play. And they added pieces each year that you were gone. And now when you come back, it seems like you've got a whole team around you that can knock the ball around and play this style. How different is it? And how fun is that for you in the position, particularly that you play, to have a group of guys like this that can play this style together?
To be honest, that team has different power, but it was fun to play.
Yeah,
I love to play in that team. We have more direct football. When we have the ball, we try to go direct to the goal and score. So it was a little bit different style. Now we have like more positioning and try to control the game and play our way. So both, it's good. I like to play, especially in this position right now. It's fun, and I'm happy to show my qualities in this system as well.
Which is more difficult for your position, the style of more direct, or the style that you play now, where you're passing the ball a little bit more and possessing it?
It's a good question. I don't think about it, but probably this one.
Yeah.
To be honest, we have closer to the goal and defending a little bit higher.
Yeah.
Right now than 3 years ago. So that's the other thing. Like I really enjoy and I feel every game like my defending qualities. I don't know how to say that. It's improving, and I really like the way how we defend and that, especially that position. So it's interesting, and I really enjoy the every day how it's I can feel new and different things to improve.
Well, you guys are coming up against a Montreal team this weekend that in the past at least seems to kind of be directly opposite from what you guys do. You guys try to keep the ball so much, and they're very dangerous on the counter. What's it like as a striker playing against maybe a team that's sitting deeper? And certainly you guys encounter that type of defensive block a lot when you're playing at Children's Mercy Park and teams are trying to get a result on the road against you. What's that like playing against teams that sit a little deeper?
I think always until the first goal, especially at home, it's always difficult for a striker. Mm-hmm. It's no space to move. It's difficult, but we have to concentrate, don't lose the ball in the dangerous positions, and finish it the actions. So if these two, we can manage it, I think we always gonna score, and probably every game we're gonna have a couple of chances to finish the actions. So the home games, what I said before, always more difficult than the away games for me, because the teams is just waiting and step back and try to pay for results. But I hope this weekend we're gonna score an early goal, and it's gonna be easier for everybody.
There you go. That should be a lot of fun. Christian, thank you so much for the time. After all this travel, we hope you get your recovery in, and we'll see you on Saturday at Children's Mercy Park.
Thank you.
All right, that's Christian Namath, and we will take a break. When we come back, we'll wrap things up. This is the Sporting Kansas City Show on Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right, we are back to wrap things up on another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, which will be your home for the radio broadcast of Sporting KC versus the Montreal Impact coming up on Saturday afternoon at Children's Mercy Park. Nate Bucati along with Carter Augustine. Of course, we also appreciate you if you're downloading the podcast at the 810 app or on Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. Our thanks to Brian Bliss and Christian Namath for joining us on the show today. Now, Carter, we look forward to, as I mentioned before, a big, big week for Sporting Kansas City. It starts on Saturday, 2 o'clock, against the Montreal Impact. Tickets are still available for this game, sportingkc.com, SeatGeek, and 8884-KC-GOAL. So you can get your tickets there. Then on Thursday night, the Champions League semifinals start against Monterrey. Let's talk about this Montreal Impact match first. This is a team second year under Remy Gard, the kind of famed French manager from Lyon, who also spent some time at my beloved Arsenal at one point in time. But they're off to a pretty decent start. They've had three games this year, all on the road. They're starting with their first six games on the road, and yet they have a 2-1 record so far. So could be a tough opponent coming here to Children's Mercy Park on Saturday.
Yeah, I think we saw them get a lot better towards the end of last season. They brought in a couple guys in August that helped them out, but just Remy Gard getting used to his players and the new team and them getting used to him, and they really were on a roll towards the end of last season, and seems like it's carried on into this year. To win two of your first three games, all of them being on the road, I think that is impressive. A little caveat, Orlando and San Jose are the teams that they beat. And
what are you saying, Carter?
Well, Orlando just beat Red Bull. So maybe they've got that thing headed in the right direction.
They looked terrible against Montreal, I will say.
Yeah, they did some comedical errors that led to some Montreal goals. But this is a team with Nacho Piatti. So you mentioned tickets being available. This is one of the guys that I would go to see this guy specifically in the league. And he just became the ninth quickest to 100 combined goals and assists. Look at this list ahead of him. Giovinco, Keane, Preki, Jaime Moreno, Davavia, Roy Lassiter, Valderrama, and Echeverry. So that's a decent company to be in. This guy is something special, and it seems like he's got some players around him in attack as well. They bring in Maxi Rooney in the offseason, but I think he and Tider are two really quality attacking players, and we've seen them in the past be really dangerous on the counterattack, which you'd expect them to have plenty of opportunities, or that's how they would address this game here at Children's Mercy Park. So I'm looking forward to this one. Should be interesting.
Yeah, Titer's a DP. He's got 2 goals and an assist already in 3 games this season, so he's dangerous as well. And you talked about some of the comedy that took place in the Orlando versus Montreal game. Maybe the most comical thing happened in the 96th minute when former Sporting KC man Dom Dwyer got into a little bit of a scuffle with Montreal defender Zakaria Diallo, and there was a little bit of a hand to the face, and Dom Dwyer made it seem like he had just taken a right cross from Tyson Fury and went to the ground, and he was able to earn the red card against Diallo. Now, the MLS went back and has fined Dom Dwyer for his play acting, making a meal out of this. Look, Dom Dwyer basically just doing a favor for his old club in this regard, because this game was over. It was the 96th minute. Orlando were down by a score of 3-1, but by kind of taking that dive and getting the red card on Diallo, all it really means is that one of the central defenders for Montreal is now suspended for this game at Children's Mercy Park on Saturday, which could be obviously a big benefit for Sporting KC.
Yeah, a bit of a favor there, because Montreal's played the same starting 11 in their first mm-hmm. 3 games. They haven't had to deal with the fixture congestion that Sporting KC has had with Champions League. So this will be the first change. It's an enforced change for Remy Gard. And, yeah, obviously he would have thought Diallo is his top man, or one of the top men there in the back. So you would think this would be a downgrade, and hopefully Sporting could take advantage of that. But, yeah, if you haven't seen that footage, it's definitely worth an old check-in on Dom Dwyer, and it's a good end of the game. End of the game, red card sending off there.
Some antics from Dom Dwyer that will leave Montreal without one of their first-choice players, as we talked about, on that back line. Now, of course, then Sporting Kansas City have to recover, turn around, and head down to Monterrey on Thursday. And I know you and I are both looking forward to that trip. It should be an incredible venue and obviously a very difficult opponent, but an opportunity for Sporting Kansas City to really to put themselves in a good position with that return game the next week.
Yeah, I'm curious, and this is going to be what we'll see the next couple of weeks now, because this huge semifinal, how does Peter Vermes and company, how do they balance the roster, and do they, shuffle some guys around? They've had a weekend off other than the international players, so does that factor in? I'd assume it probably mm-hmm. does. But that first leg in Monterrey, so big. You saw what a goal did for SKC when they went down to Panama. So if they can get a goal away in Monterrey, that'd be fantastic. But what a venue as well. I mean, these are two amazing soccer stadiums in this semifinal that this is going to be one of the most epic series in the history of this club. And you got the chance to go to the return leg April 11th here at Children's Mercy Park. But that first game is going to be absolutely massive. And I think Monterrey plays same day, the 30th, I believe, against Cruz Azul. Yeah, so they play Saturday as well. So it's the two teams will be equal in that regard, having played Saturday and Thursday. So it's getting to be a week away from just a game that just puts a smile on your face to see the quality that Monterrey has and how Sporting KC stacks up.
And as you said, you want to get your tickets for that game, the return leg on April 11th, 888-4-KC-GOAL, and it's SeatGeek, because, look, the Monterrey fans are going to come. They're going to be here. They're going to be loud. This needs to be a home field advantage. This needs to be a fortress for Sporting Kansas City at Children's Mercy Park on Thursday, April 11th, if this team is to advance to the finals for the first time in franchise history. All right, that's going to do it for us. Don't forget to tune in on Saturday, March 30th at 2 o'clock, Sporting KC against the Montreal Impact right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. For Brian Bliss, Christian Namath, and Carter Augustine, this is Nate Pucati saying thanks for listening to the Sporting Kansas City Show.